Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session, you may press star one on your touch-tone phone if you'd like to ask a question. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now, I would like to turn the meeting over to Ms. Janet Cuney. Ms. Cuney, you may begin.
Important topic for us in computer science, I think. As many of you know, we've been trying to get computer science into high school. We have two really big efforts in that arena. And the College Board effort to create a new computer science principles course is by far the most likely to get into a lot of schools. I guess I think both of our efforts are really good, and they're moving forward. One is kind of an introductory course, and then the second course is this College Board course. In the United States, education is completely decentralized, so you pretty much have to talk to every principal who can pretty much teach what they want to teach in their school. And computer science has been left out. The number of courses in computer science has gone down over the last 20 years. That's a pretty appalling statistic. The number of real academic rigorous computer science courses is down to about 19% of students get such a course. So really it's something that needs to change. And if you think about how it could change, the most likely way to change it is with an AP course, because that has an entree into a lot of schools already. A lot of organizations promote taking AP courses. Kids like them, parents like them, schools like them. So it's a really good avenue for us. So I was delighted when many years ago at this point, the College Board expressed some interest in having a brand new AP course. And at that point, Owen and Amy, our speakers today, signed on and were the PIs on a grant that we have made to do this effort. It's totally mind-boggling what's involved in creating a course. And the course itself, the framework for it exists, and we're now creating the test, which is also a really different, very complicated experience. It's going to be a really interesting test, something unlike anything the College Board has done before. So I hope we hear about that as part of this talk. So our two PIs are Amy Briggs from Middlebury College. She's on sabbatical this year in Germany, but has come back for this talk and for the SIGSE conference this week, and Owen Astrakhan, who is at Duke. And so I will turn this over to them, and they can talk about their experience.
Okay, I'm making sure it's situated. Thanks, Jan, and thanks people at NSF and people abroad, somewhere out there in the virtual world. We're first grateful to Jan for really imagining this whole thing and having NSF be able to fund it, because it's a way that we can change the world of how computer science is taught in our high schools and in our colleges at the same time. So it's a great opportunity, and thanks to NSF and Jan. That's me. I have a family, and I think one of the things that Amy and I want to tell you about is that there's a huge community of people working on this. We are the PIs. We have another co-PI who's not here, but it is a huge group. I have a family. Amy has a family. We are all a family. I could sing that song for you, but that will have to remain for some other time. And we want to really make it clear that we are heading up this initiative, but there are a lot of people and a lot of moving parts, and without all of them, we wouldn't be doing what we are. So we're going to kind of give you an overview and a motivation for why this project exists. In case it's not clear what an AP course is, we'll talk a little bit about that and what the alternatives are. We'll talk about the support from NSF and our partners, and we'll have a lot of details on what the course is like and how it's been rolled out over several years, some future directions, and lots of time for questions, maybe. So, first thing, we're starting off and telling you, there is and will be an AP exam in 2016-2017. So, that is on the table. All systems go. There's no, unlike a rocket launch, you can't really pull it back. So, we're pretty confident this is going to happen. So, as we continue to tell you the story of how this came and how it evolved, know that there's going to be this very interesting exam that tens to hundreds of thousands of people will be taken in just a few years. That's mind-boggling. I'm going to give you a quote that resonates with me. For those of you that don't know Robert Heinlein, who has his own issues, I will read this quote to you so you know one of the things that we're trying to get across. A human being should be able to change a diaper, plan an invasion, butcher a hog, con a ship, design a building, write a sonnet, balance accounts, build a wall, set a bone, comfort the dying, take orders, give orders, cooperate, act alone, solve equations, analyze a new problem, pitch manure, program a computer, cook a tasty meal, fight efficiently, die gallantly. Specialization is for insects. One of the things that we want to be able to do with our course and the build out to future study, because we don't want students just to take one course and think that they're done, is to say that this is about computing and STEM and something else, because computing is going to be great for a lot of people, and we know that there are more opportunities for that. But it's computing and biology, computing and economics, computing and other initiatives that we want to make sure that we're helping to build a foundation for, so that helps us get there. We are, I think, helping to create an effective education for today's cyber citizenry. Even if you're not doing computing plus X, you're living in a cyber world where understanding some of these issues is going to be important for you to be an effective citizen, since so many things are online, and understanding some of those basics, I think, will be key for how you do things. One of the nice or interesting aspects about teaching this course is that it's always topical. Every year, something new is in the news that you can use to drive it. Apparently, not everybody knows this. So, at least for the local people, I can ask you, if you know what this is, could you just raise your hand so I kind of know who I'm talking to? And if you're looking at this and thinking, I don't know exactly what that is, or I have never heard of Flappy Bird. It's Flappy Bird. Flappy Bird is big. It's in the news. I'm not going to tell you the details because you'd have to take our course to know what those details are. But here's some other things that are in the news. On your right, Bitcoin. Big in the news. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand about whether you know about Bitcoin, because if you read the paper every day, you're going to see something about Bitcoin. There is cybersecurity, which is a big concern. We are having all kinds of nuanced and interesting issues from all aspects of government in terms of what's the next kind of weapon that we need to be concerned about. And these issues are kind of front and center in our course. That when I say our course, I mean the course that we're helping to build. And that makes it interesting every time you teach it. There's something new that you can bring to play. That's important. Because we are not just computer science, we think we are building all these disciplines together, and it's much more colorful and much more shapely to have both art, math, engineering, and science. We have kind of hardcore circuit engineers and software engineers. All these images have been meticulously found using Google search. We have mathematics, which is a big part of what we do, and it's also part of this course. And then we have science, both from biology and fluid dynamics. And we have art. And what we're trying to do now is to capture the imagination and the interest and the engagement of students in all these areas. So not just necessarily computing, but students that come from all these disciplines. Recently, one of our colleagues from Georgia Tech came up with an analysis of who was taking the existing advanced placement course, and these are states where no one took AP, or no women took AP, or no underrepresented groups took AP computer science. So it looks big because some of those states are big, and in those states, there were either no women or no underrepresented groups, and in some cases, no students, period, which is why there were no women, took computer science. That's the current state, because AP is a national course and exam. After we're done in 2016, this is what the world is going to look like. Everybody is going to be studying computer science. And so we're going to tell you a little bit about how we're going to get there. That's what this is doing. One of the things we want to make clear is that it's that no one can make this happen. We are working in partnership with other people, and that's how it's going to happen. So we're going to work together to make it happen. Three of the people that are working on this together, three of the groups, computer science principals, I'm skipping the animation, exploring computer science, Jan mentioned, is another one of the initiatives that's not an AP course, and All of them are working with CO.org and other groups, and we'll kind of tell you a little bit about those. That gives you a little bit of flavor for where we're going, and then I'm turning it over to Amy, who's going to tell you something about where we are.
Okay. Thank you, Owen. Owen provided a lot of context for the course and some of the things that we're looking at in the course and some of our partners. I want to look next at some of the history, kind of where we came from, what was our motivation in creating this course and in our collaboration with the National Science Foundation. Look a little at some of the details of how the course is being constructed, what the assessment looks like at this point, what we're currently doing and have been doing over the past 3 or 4 years in piloting this course nationwide, and then where we're going with the launch of AP course and exam in 16-17. We'll start off with some of the motivation. This is this is a slide of where the STEM jobs will be that you're very familiar with, that the that in computing, that computing jobs will be a big majority of these, of the STEM jobs, and that we are underproducing computer scientists. We have more demand for computer scientists than we have students preparing with these skills. It's important that all students acquire the skills and knowledge in STEM. At the same time, we have not only an underproduction of degrees in computer science, but we have an even worse problem that that we have a huge underrepresentation of women and underrepresented minorities in the computing field. And you see here, for example, in different fields, that we have 57% of all undergraduate degrees, 42 in mathematics and statistics, and so on. But a mere 18%, the red line is in computer science, of women degrees in computer science. So this is a quite alarming trend, and you see that the red line is worse than in these other disciplines. And these are some problems that we in computer science are quite familiar with and are part of our motivation for developing this course. These are some of the things that we were aware of and working to correct back in 2008 or so when we started to design this course. So what happens then, going back earlier in the pipeline, in advanced placement? Again, similarly, we have in the advanced placement STEM offerings, we have many students taking calculus, biology, statistics has been a new exam that's been very very successful, physics, chemistry, computer science, where we should have a much higher percentage of students taking computer science. We see a really very flat growth that has improved over the last couple of years, and what we're talking about here is the existing AP Computer Science A, the one computer science course and exam that the College Board Advanced Placement program offers. It has had a slight uptick, but not what we would really like to see. Again, looking at a gender breakdown, even we have a very small number of students taking the APCSA, but of that small number, very few are female students. And as Owen indicated, that trend has not yet improved. Okay, we have more students taking CSA. There has been a slight uptick, but there really hasn't been a change in the percentage. And at this point, girls are approximately 19% of all CSA test takers. So faced with all of this, knowing this landscape, many organizations, computer science educators, the National Science Foundation, were all alarmed and wanting to do something to address these problems. So starting in around 2007-2008, an alliance started to be formed, and as Jan mentioned, the College Board and the National Science Foundation started talking to each other about what can we do to address the problems of the shortfall of in computer science education and the problems of needing to broaden participation beyond those few students who are both a few number of students and traditionally white male students. So a coalition of the National Science Foundation, College Board, computer science educators, and some professional groups started to work to address this this problem. We had an initial grant to ask, is this something that the College Board could do by changing its computer science A course? Could we make this a better course? We met with a group of computer science department chairs back in the fall of 2008, and the answer was, well, we do need to improve our computer science A course, but there's room for something else, something that will address a broader audience of students and will help our high school students become computationally savvy no matter what discipline they are then going into. This was the birth of computer science principles, and the idea being this would be a rigorous, a creative, a new alternative college-level course in computing that would be offered at the high school level. It grew out of a collaborative interaction of academia, College Board, National Science Foundation, and professional organizations. It's different in that it's not a programming course, but emphasizes and engages creativity. Students will grapple with how does computing enable them to change the world. And it'll also correspond with one of the CSTA is the Computer Science Teachers Association. They have a number of curriculum standards, and it aligns with one of their levels. So this was our idea, and that this course should appeal to a broad audience, both through its content and its pedagogy. So beyond this initial group, who was the sort of the group that launched this? We had a group of Jan at the National Science Foundation. The College Board convened a Computer Science Principles Commission and an advisory group of individuals from computer science departments around the country who worked to do the initial design of this course. That grew into a partnership and a grant that we now have to launch the course with that's under Jan's leadership. Owen and I as PIs, along with a PI at the College Board and others in the AP program at the College Board. As far as the timeline of how this is then taken off, the commission met for a few years to design an initial curriculum. We were informed by this advisory group, and then we launched a series of pilots. The initial pilot was just five universities. We essentially just gave them our big ideas for this curriculum and said, let's see what they come up with. And they came up with some great things that we've then built this course on. In 11-12, we had a second larger pilot where we partnered universities and high schools. Last year, we had a very small pilot where we worked very closely with those schools on a series of particular tasks. This year, we're starting the second phase of the project, and we have 12 universities, 36 high schools. We'll be working with them over the next few years. We've engaged an advisory panel to work with us on psychometrics, broadening participation, and some of the aspects of the assessment. And then the College Board has convened a development committee. And, of course, all of that is happening in the context of a growing community of support and collaboration. As far as the pilots, we refer to the first few years of this as phase one. We learned a lot from the experiences of those pilots. We work with them very closely. We have them working together. We have Google Hangouts where we have them meeting with each other, sharing their curriculum materials and their experiences in the classrooms, and then we meet with them to learn from those about what they're doing, what their challenges are, and how we can then respond to that in furthering the project. So here's where the graphic indicates where some of those initial pilots were, and now in the second phase, these are indicating the schools that are piloting the course now. We meet with them a couple of times a year in person, face-to-face. We're meeting with them later this week. And we have them, again, meeting in small groups, Google Hangouts, that we can check in with and work very closely with them. So what is this course, APCS Principles? Can we tell you a little bit more about the idea of the course? Owen read you a quote about the well-rounded person. Here's our elevator pitch for computer science principles that was crafted by Owen and others at the AP annual and read by Pat Young, product of code.org at the annual conference. I'd like to tell you about a new course for creating educated cyber citizens, able to thrive in a world where computing is changing how we live and think. Even more than writing code, this course is about innovation and impact. It's about understanding how healthcare is changing because computer algorithms and programs have helped make genomic person-specific medicine possible. It's about reconnecting with folks you haven't seen in 20 years and staying connected with folks you met 20 minutes ago. It's about bringing our mobile devices along with us so we can read, connect, play, and learn anywhere, anytime. It's about using the power of collaboration and crowdsourcing to change the world. We can do this by learning about how computer science is used as a lever to move our world. In no other era has technology empowered students to participate in creative acts more than now, and it's all because of computer science. No matter what career path students take, computer science can help them make new things and solve problems. Computer science becomes much more powerful when people from diverse perspectives work together to create solutions. Students will learn all this in a new course that every student should take. This course is called APCS Principles. Offer it at your school. So that was the elevator pitch that we came up with about our course that is based on our curriculum framework is based on what we're calling the big ideas of computing. And we crafted these in collaboration with the advisory group, and there are seven of them. We just put four on this first slide, but wanted to forefront the first idea. Computing is a creative activity, so creativity goes right at the front. Abstraction reduces information and detail to facilitate focus on relevant concepts. Data and information facilitate the creation of knowledge. Algorithms are used to develop and express solutions to computational problems. Programming enables problem solving, human expression, creation of knowledge. The internet pervades modern computing, and computing has global impacts. So as you can see, even just from these seven statements, what you might think of as a computer science course might forefront programming, and in here, programming is just one aspect of the course. We're really taking a very broad view of computer science and its potential impact. Along with these big ideas, these content areas, the thinking practices, the skills that students develop in the course are in connecting computing with potentially other disciplines, developing computational artifacts, abstracting, the ability to abstract, create abstractions, analyzing problems, artifacts, communicating with other, with peers, communicating with the world, and collaborating. And you'll see work that students are doing that are that involve all of these computational thinking practices. I'm not going to go into these specifically, but just to highlight here just some examples. In the area of algorithms, algorithms is something that we look at very traditionally in a computer science course, but we want to take a different look in computer science principles. And as Owen mentioned in his remarks on the context, this course offers us an opportunity to always be thinking, what is going to be relevant to our students today? What are some algorithms that are changing the world? How are algorithms really relevant and going to change the world? Here's an example, algorithms for kidney exchange. In the area of data and information, one of our big ideas, we're not just talking about playing with Excel, playing with spreadsheets, but data is helping us to cure, to solve big problems in healthcare, to cure diseases and so on. So we might want to have students looking at problems related to machine learning and how those techniques combined with big data are enabling us to solve problems we weren't able to solve before. Another area that is harnessing the power of computing in new ways, crowdsourcing or human computation, where we are using the power of people's distributed computation to solve problems we weren't able to solve before. So we have a course built on big ideas of computing that teach students these skills of abstracting and developing computational artifacts. We look at those content areas through the lens of activities that are going to be relevant and engaging to our students. We have the entire curriculum framework on a website that we maintain, that is csprinciples.org. We'll have this slide up again later. And we'll be looking a little bit more at the details of some of the aspects of the course, but I just wanted to mention this now. And I'm going to turn it over to Owen now to give a little bit more about advanced placement and more details about the project.
We are going to tell you all about what the exam looks like, at least as it's currently instantiated, to give you an idea of why it's different from other exams, not just why it's appealing to a different audience. One of the things that this course does is give you college credit or placement because it's an AP course, and that means that we have to have equivalent courses in colleges. If there are no courses for which you can get credit, students aren't going to take the AP course. There are some reasons that students take AP courses in addition to getting college credit and placement. In many schools, you get a GPA bump with an AP course. That turns out to be important for a certain audience of students, especially those thinking about themselves as college-bound students. There are 27 current AP courses. This is the first new course in 10 years, so they don't come along very often. And the process for creating them, as we've kind of mentioned, is this involved, intricate, well-designed process that College Board uses, and so we're part of that. One thing that the course does is allow you to personalize it. So I'm going to show you something about all the different NSF-sponsored initiatives that are behind CS Principles, and then I'll come back and we'll tell you some more about the exam. One of the things that has changed over time as Amy and I have worked in the course is when it first started, we were part of a group of 10 that was creating the framework, that was designing the draft assessment, and led a lot of the kind of hands-on activities that made the course. Now that's moved over. The exam part has moved over to be part of the established College Board procedures. So one of the things that we're doing is kind of making sure that all the different partners that we have are cognizant of what's going on. So Jeff Gray in Alabama has a very interesting project that's a CE21 project. In Maryland, there is a project. I'm going to just give you a little view. Remember, these are all the states that are eventually going to be the entire United States of students that are taking this exam. Mobile CSP in Connecticut, Project Engage in Texas, Beth Simon and a group of collaborators in both California and Ohio now are working on a course, and Dan Garcia and Tiffany Barnes have a collaboration also between California and North Carolina. All these groups are working together. Lori Pollack in Delaware also has an initiative. This tells you where the current courses are. So this, in addition to the pilots that Amy told you about, which were just our pilots, our College Board pilots, this we will see, and if you go to that map URL, you'll see it, that you can kind of engage with that and see the different schools. We have here all those College Board partners and the kind of public-private partnership that we have, because Project Lead the Way, which is an organization that's in many schools, has more pilots right now than any other one group. If you go to that URL, you'll see it all. I just wanted to give you an indication of where these courses are. It's interesting that they seem to be along the Eastern Seaboard far more than anywhere else. I don't know why that's the case. Maybe you can all figure that out and help me do it. I want to tell you one personal anecdote related to the job slide that Amy told you before. I've never been a big fan of the job slide. I don't think that, for me, it resonates in selling things to my students. I want to sell them on the education that I'm going to give them in my classroom and why it's going to be the best education they could possibly imagine, and I'm the best instructor they'll ever see. And the job thing never really worked for me until yesterday, when my son, and when I picked him up from school, said, "Hey, Dad, do you know about this company, Red Cap, Red something?" And I said, "Oh, Red Hat?" He said, "Yeah, Red Hat. Red Hat." I said, "Yeah, I know a lot about Red Hat." And he said, "Do you know that if you take a computer science course at my school, it's not uncommon that you can get a job there that pays $17 an hour?" So I don't think he's interested in what's going to happen in 5 years or 10 years. He's interested because he's thinking that a car might be in his future because he's 15. And $17 an hour, he can put that is right now. So that's going to help me kind of focus the message that for students, what's going to be in a few years may not matter. What's going to be tomorrow may be pretty important to them. And if that's about jobs that they can get now, I think that's going to help me sell this course. Because if I can sell it to my 15-year-old, then I can probably sell it to a lot of people. And he's ready to take the exam in 2016. He also told me that would be a cool thing to do. So I'm even more excited about computer science principles than I was before. I'm coming back to this slide to make sure that you understand the scope of what we're doing. It's in a lot of places. There's still a lot of work to go. Amy's going to tell you some more about the exam itself.
My microphone? About that. All right.
So our assessment is being developed by a College Board group, the Development Committee, and the initial plan is that it will consist of two parts, a computer-based assessment where a student would have some fixed response questions. Those are some questions that might have, that might be multiple choice, there might be a simulation that the student could engage with and answer some questions about that simulation, but those would be typical kind of objectively scored fixed response questions. But in addition, what we're developing, and we're working very hard with our pilot schools to implement this currently, is that there would additionally be a set of performance tasks that will be in three different areas, and that will, again, in keeping with our theme of engaging students with material that is relevant, engaging to them, there'll be performance tasks that students will work on over a period of time and then submit that work as part of their assessment. And our reasons for choosing to go down this path is that these components will allow students to create new things, and in addition, you'll see we'll have them actually collaborating with each other. So the
the current plans for the performance tasks. And some of you have heard of this in development. Previously, we had referred to these as a portfolio. We're not referring to it as a portfolio because it's really not a portfolio in the traditional sense, but rather we have three different tasks that we set the students. We have one that is investigate, and that's working with data. Explore is having them do some research on something that's a computing innovation, and create that's having the students do some programming. So the performance task aspect already is quite innovative, but even more so, students working on these performance tasks will do them in pairs. So there will be a collaborative component to these performance tasks. They'll work in collaboration, perhaps defining the questions that they want to investigate, and then they will reflect on their work and on their collaboration. Part of their work will not only be to produce an artifact that they submit, but also to, in some cases, prepare a write-up about that artifact. So then the assessment is both fixed response and these performance tasks, and it's all based on the curriculum framework. I mentioned earlier just the big ideas, the thinking practices. There are also a set of learning objectives, what it is that the students need to be able to know and do. So here's just a single example that we just pulled out. One learning objective under the area of abstraction is that students should be able to describe the combination of abstractions used to represent data. So under that learning objective, there will be some essential knowledge that a combination of abstractions is used to represent digital data. Data is represented by bits. We have higher level of abstractions, IP packets, and so on. You can see that this curriculum framework, we're just showing you a little snapshot, has many layers of information in it and content that the students will be learning. So here's an example.
We might be asked, well, why would we go through the expense of developing performance tasks, of grading student responses to these performance tasks? And we really consider these to be a necessary part of the course because this course is trying to do something different. We are wanting to emphasize creativity, engage students in creativity, and having students collaborate. So here's an example. One of our learning objectives is that students will collaborate in the creation of computational artifacts. The content here, collaboration is an essential part of creating computational artifacts. Collaboration facilitates multiple perspectives. Computational artifacts can reflect collaborative intent. Another example is a learning objective. Students will collaborate when processing information to gain insight and knowledge. So students are going to be collaborating and developing hypotheses and questions and in coming up with the solutions to those in studying large data sets. Another example, collaborate when processing information to gain insight and knowledge in working with data-driven problems. So here's the actual performance task itself. There's a long write-up description set of criteria for the students, but essentially the high-level task is that student and partner will select an area of focus, develop programs related to that focus area, and the evaluation, the rubrics that are used to evaluate the work will not only evaluate the creativity, the collaboration, the ability to design the algorithms, and then, of course, properly working programming, program documentation, and the use of abstraction. What the student actually produces is programs along with a user guide and descriptions of their algorithms, their abstraction, what their process was of debugging, the language features that they used, and a reflection. Another task is the so-called explore task, where a student will select a computing innovation of interest that has had significant impact on our society, possesses the potential for both beneficial and harmful effects. Here the student might be creating a presentation or a video, some digital artifact, and along with that, a written piece that is reflecting on the innovation, on the impact, what population is affected. You know, an example from the news today would be, let's say a student decides to write about Bitcoin, would have to identify what population those issues are, that this technology is affecting, what some of the benefits and drawbacks might be. And this task is always going to change. The task write-up, the description, will stay the same, but every year the students need to be finding topics that are currently in the news, so the solutions are going to be changing year to year. And the third task is investigating. This is working with data. Here, again, this is collaborative. Student works with a partner to research and work with data that is of interest. They'll identify a problem area and find large data sets and ask questions of those large data. They might have one or more large data sets and use computational tools to transform the raw data into information and knowledge. Their contribution, again, will be some kind of presentation that is taking the data in the large data sets and then communicating it, finding ways to communicate information. So these might be some kind of an artifact presentation and then answers to questions about their methodology and about their use of computational tools, how they couldn't have done this without computation, and then reflecting on the collaboration. Again, we have all the write-ups for those performance tasks, the specification of those performance tasks on csprinciples.org. You can read about the curriculum framework that is describing the course, and then what is currently being piloted and working on with all of these, how we are envisioning taking these performance tasks and revising them over the next few years and having this be part of the eventual AP assessment. So I'm going to wrap up here with a summary of where we are with AP Computer Science Principles, the development of this course. It's been in development for the last few years. It will be a new offering, the newest offering of the AP program in 16-17. It's designed to be a rigorous college-level course that's engaging and effective at targeting students, all students, across all demographics. Our idea is that all students, no matter what discipline they want to study, need computational skills, and this course should be available to all students. It will have been piloted for 6 years before that exam year. We have had great fortune in working with wonderful partners, with the National Science Foundation, with code.org, exploring computer science, the NCWIT, working with Women in Technology, the Association of Computing Machinery. All of these professional groups have been very supportive and productive partners for us and gaining very widespread acceptance of the project at both high schools and colleges and universities. The very unique assessment that is envisioned for the course is both encouraging collaboration, enabling the expression of creativity, and as we are moving forward with this, we are making sure that our assessment and our course and our materials are all designed
with our goal of broadening participation and supporting the goal of broadening participation.
I'm going to turn it over to Owen to continue with some of the challenges that we're facing next.
I will be very quick with challenges so that we have time for questions. These are things that we've learned over piloting, especially this last year with so many different pilots. These performance tasks that Amy just told you about, which when you're going to have to work with a partner, where you're going to have to turn in some artifact that you spent anywhere from 2 weeks to 4 weeks doing, those are new and different. Those require teachers to scaffold their courses in a different way than they're used to doing. That's going to take a lot of practice. There are a lot of details and debate from the curriculum framework that Amy told you about. She told you about bits and bytes and how those come into play. For some people, that means that hexadecimal numbers are very important, and you might want to get into those details. Other people don't think that hexadecimal numbers are important, and trying to go back and forth between the two different approaches is going to be interesting. The course has been designed to be language agnostic. You can use any programming language as part of the create task and as part of what you do in your course. That's going to be a have to turn in the work that they do and have that be evaluated by somebody. If a student in a whole school has the teacher think that we're going to do Lua, this is the language that we use for Angry Birds, so we're going to spend all our time using it. That makes it different. That's one of the challenges that this platform, the idea that it can be actually be language agnostic, it's unclear how that's going to roll out in practice. The college and university community does not in general understand high school, and yet this is being led from in many places, the college and university community. That has its own issues because sometimes the things that we think are great at where we teach don't actually work in a high school, and sometimes that things that work in a high school don't work where we are. And that turns out to be fine because as long as we teach courses for which students get credit, life will be good. But if we don't teach courses that students get credit for, it's not going to work as an AP course. These are challenges that are challenges for anything, so I think I can just leave that and let you know that we are dreaming big and working hard. And if you have questions, now we have time for you to do that. Yes? Repeating the question just to make sure that everybody that's not here understands it, as I understand it, and you make sure I got this right, is some of these performance tasks have a collaborative component. How are you going to assess that collaborative piece? Because this is a high-stakes exam, and how much will the collaborative piece count, for example, compared to the whole piece, and since it's supposed to be a score that reflects an individual achievement, and how does the collaborative piece work in that context? Is that basically right? And here's my quick answer. The rubrics for grading and evaluating these performance tasks are about to become part of the community. They're being developed by the assessment experts at the College Board. They are going to be released for our pilot instructors sometime in the next month or two. And I think when we see that, we're going to see an evolution of how that works. I can tell you that what my own biases are going in, but those turn out not to be necessarily so relevant in terms of how the College Board will do it. I predict that the collaborative piece can't count that much. That's my prediction. Because if it did, then why wouldn't everybody want to collaborate with the good students? That's exactly right. If it doesn't count that much, how do you make sure they do it? And I think there are some challenges there, and I think that the College Board people and we in talking to them have some ideas on how that would work that are kind of necessary for this to go forward. It has to be that it counts, and it has to be that it doesn't have a large effect. That's what I think, and I think we're going to find out very soon how to actually make that work in practice.
So I just want to add in that we've been really champions of the idea of collaboration from the start, And that's this is an important part of the course, and that we have this period of piloting and iteratively developing these and learning from our experiences through those pilots, that we want the collaboration, we want the ability for students to do something that's of interest to them, and we're not going to not do it just because we can't figure out from day one, you know, how to make it work. But in the development of the task specifications, part of them are things that students are doing by themselves, and part of it is collaborative, and those will be weighted, you know, as part of the score.
Question there, and then I'll come here.
This is the conference coordinator. Would you like to begin the question and answer session for all participants, or do you have a question within your room?
We have a question in the room, so let me get it. We have two questions here, and then we'll turn to you. Is that okay?
Thank you, sir. Mr. Astrakhan, Ms. CUNY, are you there?
Yes, we are. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. I just heard silence and became concerned.
I'm sorry. We're waiting for a question to be asked in the room. I'll repeat the question, and then we'll turn to you for some questions from the room.
Thank you so much for clarifying.
Absolutely. I think we got it. So let me. The question is, how can two different approaches coexist, where one is the standard introduction to computer science that we've seen, and another is a very different introduction to computer science, especially given the context in the academic circles where people like to argue about whether their approach is better, more computer science-y, more engaging, more this, and how can both of those approaches work together so that this is not viewed as a dead end, so that students taking this don't continue to do computer science? If I got that right, I think there are a couple of easy answers. And the question to elaborate is, since both of these are AP courses, what kind of course will you get credit and placement for? And I think it's pretty clear based on we went through a large attestation process where we had to have colleges and universities say, we will give credit or placement based on an idea of the course before we even had the framework that we have, and we got a huge buy-in. It was an enormous undertaking. And the College Board was, I think, frankly shocked that we got the buy-in that we did in order to proceed. This APCS principle, in most places, is not the required introduction for majors. However, if hundreds of thousands of people take this course and no one took another course ever, it would not be a success. But I think our view is that if hundreds of thousands of people take this course and get credit for a general education college course, not necessarily a course that's required for the major, many of them will be excited by that and then want to continue in the major. We've seen that in all our pilot schools, every single one of them, both high schools and college. People take this course, and in college they'll say, I can't believe I took this course as a senior. And often we get, do you have like a one-year post-bac experience that I can do to get a major in a year? So it's very clear that we're engaging students that didn't used to think of themselves as computer science students who want to continue. If you get them as seniors in college, it's hard to do. If you get them as seniors in high school, it's easy to do. And so I think what we're doing is we're attracting a much more diverse and larger set of students to be interested in this. And if they get credit or placement for the course at the college, it turns out that the driver is getting them interested in computer science. And that's what we hope to see.
And I wanted to add that at the high school level, the two AP courses are really they're not, one is not a prerequisite for the other. So a student could take APCS principles, APCSA, you know, theoretically in either order. They could take them both. They could take either one. And then at the college level,
again, you're going to be serving different audiences perhaps, but that the APCS principals will both widen the pipeline of students who are exposed to computer science and may be interested in further study of computer science, and it will expose more students to the techniques of computational thinking, of you know, using computation to solve problems, no matter what it is that they then go on to study. So we, you know, it's part of creating a computationally savvy student population.
Is there a question from out there in virtual land?
At this time, we can begin the question and answer session or continue it. To ask a question, you may please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Please unmute your phone and record your first and last name clearly when prompted. To withdraw your question, press star 2. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your name. One moment, please, for our first question. And our first question comes from Ms. Karen Blanton. Ms. Blanton, your line is open.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering who will be responsible for providing training for high school teachers to lead the CS Principles course?
The question was who will be responsible for providing training for teachers to teach the CS Principles course? If you look at the graph that I had, which showed you where all the pilot schools are, almost all of those dots on the graph come from existing projects that have professional development for teachers that want to be part of what they do. So if you're in an area that's served by one of those NSF-sponsored projects, they can provide professional development for you. Project Lead the Way is a national organization that, again, schools and districts partner with. They will also provide professional development. There are going to be College Board-sponsored professional development possibilities that will be coming online soon, and CODE.org is partnering with school districts to do that as well. So there are many initiatives underway to kind of get up to speed with how things work, and so that's happening. That's a quick answer.
So there's professional development that's offered by the College Board directly, and then as that ramps up, there's professional development that's offered by those who are already in the community. For example, some of the projects we mentioned, CS for Alabama, we mentioned CE21 Maryland, Mobile CSP in Connecticut, Project Engage in Texas. We have a number of groups, and these are all offering some form of professional development. And many are NSF sponsored supports.
Is there another question?
I have no further questions at this time. If you'd like to ask a question, plus press star 1 on your phone.
We don't hear we have time for maybe one more here. We have a person pressing star 1. Please feel free to go ahead.
And I have no further questions on our end at this time.
Thank you.
We're taking a question from the room, and we'll repeat it.
The question was interesting in that it seems like this course is very math heavy, and as a follow-up, it hasn't been mapped to some of the math standards so that people might be getting math credit for it, and are the math teachers interested? So I have two answers. One, it is not math heavy whatsoever, unless you want it to be, and that way you could, but there's no prescription in the curriculum framework for any math. The prerequisite is Algebra 1 in a high school to be able to take it. So for most people, it will not be math heavy. Certainly different schools could make it that way. We are aligning with national standards. We're making presentation at the National Council for Teachers of Mathematics to make sure that that audience is aware of what we're doing. In many states, it's going to count as a math credit or a science credit, mostly because that's what it's most closely aligned to, and that depends on the state where that works. So, yes, those are in play, and it's only math heavy if you choose to make it math heavy. And most of our pilots are not making it math heavy. Any other questions?
Again, I have no further questions on our end at this time.
Thank you. The question is, if a district wants to do CS principals, what's the process for doing so? And I think there are several answers to that question. If you're in a huge district, you have more possibilities because you might be able to partner with some of these public-private partnerships that we've alluded to. If you're not, you can apply for a grant from the National Science Foundation with someone and try to do it. If that's not what you want to do and you want to just do it by yourself, I think the way to do it is to go to csprinciples.org, see one of the groups that's doing CS Principles so that you can engage with them to say, what's your curriculum look like? What is the professional development that your group is doing? And see if they can kind of come and help partner with the district. Because most districts are not going to have enough computer science at the district level already to turn the existing teachers over to this, because then they wouldn't be doing something else. So most of the districts that we are aware of are trying to bring new teachers up to speed or take teachers that are already doing computer science and having them divide between this and something else. And sometimes those teachers become master teachers in the district and then can lead other people into it. So there's several approaches there. That's a quick answer. And the longer answer is send us an email and we can point you to some of them. The question is, if you're in a school district that's either rural or doesn't have lots of students and opportunities, are there consortia coming together to build something that might help in those districts? North Carolina has a North Carolina Virtual School where they have outreach to all the schools and all the public schools in North Carolina, and they have a CS Principals pilot going on right now, so that means that there are only a few students in each school that participate. I think the logistics of how those students work in this collaborative performance task are things that need to be worked out, because if you only have one student in a school, they have to have a partner in another school. And I think those are opportunities that currently have not the same amount of attention being given to them as in the large urban settings, which have a much bigger impact. So we and the community we work in are aware of them, but haven't approached them with kind of the same, I think, dedication that we need to.
So of course, in addition to the AP version of the course, there are many schools that are offering a computer science principles type of course, and the community is very interested in this direction, and there are groups that are talking about developing MOOCs and so on. So there should continue to be a growing body of support for schools that want to offer some version of the course.
Other questions? None. Okay, and do we get to sign off officially?
Thank you for having us.
That concludes today's conference. All participants may disconnect at this time.